Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the podcast. My name is Ben Bolin. I'm a video writer here at HowStuffWorks, waitfortit.com.
And I'm Scott Benjamin. I'm the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com also.
Yes.
What's happening?
Oh, man, what's happening with you, man?
I don't know. Thinking about roads.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm thinking about roads today because we've got a kind of an interesting topic. Doesn't sound too interesting on the front end here. It's something that a lot of people find annoying, really, is road construction.
Oh, yeah.
But we're kind of taking a different angle.
Yeah, we're you guys have been listening to us for a while. We're not going to do you like that with some boring, you know, with something boring. We're going to at least give you some interesting stuff so that you will be able to amaze almost all of your friends unless they actually work on road construction, in which case they probably already know most of what we're going to
say. They probably know what we're going to talk about then.
But, Scott, did they know that historians trace the first use of asphalt to 625 BC?
I don't know, Ben.
I don't know if they know that either.
No, we haven't met these people. How far back, really? I didn't hear you.
Yeah, 625 BC.
625 BC?
Mm-hmm. Asphalt. And that's not even, you know, the first road, because it's really interesting. I was thinking about this before. I was thinking about this on the way to work today. We'll do a road rage podcast later in the future, maybe. But
sure.
But what I was thinking about is, if you really think it out, roads are one of the only non-human inventions that are still around and very prominent in the world, because the first roads that we see people using a lot were already paths established by animals.
Oh, sure. There were herds of animals that were traveling, and they would track down brush and things like that. Mm-hmm. You still see them. You see deer paths and things like that in the woods.
Right, right. And that usually between food sources and water.
Yeah.
Water and food sources determined a lot of where human civilization really started to, I don't know, get big, blow up.
Sure.
Whatever you want to.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound too, dismissive or whatever, but it's amazing that they have lasted this long and they've gone through a lot of stuff. But I got to tell you, man, I am aggravated with the roads in Atlanta.
Why is that?
You know what we're going to talk about for a second, at least, for a second, Scott.
The orange barrels.
The orange barrels, the potholes. Worst of all,
potholes. Wait, what? You're in Atlanta talking about potholes?
And those metal plates, Scott.
Oh, the metal
those
plates.
Those metal plates.
Yeah. Okay.
I swear, we have someone who goes around and just throws metal plates on the ground.
I agree with you on the metal plates. And if no one out there knows what we're talking about,
then
these
you're
metal
very
plates.
Lucky. You're lucky.
Holy cow, these things are bad. They put them over enormous holes in the road where they're digging for construction projects. There may be 50 of these things in a row.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes there's just one. And when you hit it, oh my gosh, you know you've hit it, because it's probably about an inch thick. It feels like it's
about
an inch thick. And oftentimes they don't even put any asphalt up to it, so it doesn't. You don't ramp up to it. You just hit it, you know, the blunt edge. And it's bone jarring, I'll tell you that. And a lot of times there's big brackets or bolts on the top of it. What were you mentioning the other day? Sometimes they shift.
Oh yeah, when an especially heavy vehicle comes by there, I'm not sure. I've never actually seen it happen, but I've seen the traces, because sometimes these metal plates will have shifted away from the hole. So it's completely possible, depending on how you hit this area, it's completely possible for you to seriously damage your car.
So you could hit the edge of it. It could slip into the hole and flip up and hit the front of your car.
Wow. God, I hope not.
If you hit it slow enough, I think
yeah,
it could.
Yeah, I bet that's
it?
A possibility. Yeah,
I bet it could.
Oh,
I guess
man.
It could also swallow up bikers and walkers.
Yeah, slow walkers.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
If you're in Atlanta walking,
probably.
Don't relax by those.
But honestly, it's the pothole thing. I don't know, Ben. I see very few. I'll tell you, there's a guy on local television station that goes around and hunts down individual potholes in the city and gets them fixed. So that tells you how few there are.
God bless that man.
Yeah. They really annoy you, but you know what? Honestly, travel to a northern environment, like you go to Minnesota or Michigan or Wisconsin or any of those places, you're going to find mile after mile after mile of roads that you can't imagine how jarring it is to ride down these roads. They're nothing but potholes.
How does this happen?
It's the freezing and thawing. Just year after year, the freezing and thawing, it just heaves the pavement upwards. Water gets inside, it lifts it up, and then of course these stones chipped away with, you know, either just because it's raised up, it's you know, being hit by vehicles. It's being scraped with snow plows. There's a lot of activity that happened. You know, it's not designed, the road surface is not designed to be like that. It's supposed to be laying together flat, and when it gets pushed upwards, it's able to be just chipped away and peeled away at little pieces at a time. And then they try to patch it, and the patch then, you know, the next season or even earlier, that comes loose because the materials don't match, or they just don't adhere quite well enough. There's a lot of reasons why potholes form and reform. I mean, there's a completely scientific, you know, version of all of this, but right. I'm just giving the quick and dirty version that, you know.
Please, freeze and thaw.
That's what happens.
No matter, excuse me. What we're also talking about, and one of the weaknesses of this design, which again, this has been in the making for thousands of years, so we've really done pretty well as a species evolving these. I think most paved roads now are made out of either asphalt or concrete. Mm-hmm. And the asphalt the asphalt definitely uses bitumen. Bitumen?
Yeah, sure. I'll go with that.
All right. Somebody right now is so angry at us.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. But it uses this substance to glue together sand and crushed rock. And then it's heated about 300 degrees. And then that's what you see workers spreading and mashing down onto the road when you are in those delays and driving around those notorious orange cones. Mm-hmm. Or they could be using concrete, and that's just using cement and water as the glue between the sand and the crushed rock. This goes back always to sand and crushed rock. And then they put them into some steel forms or, you know, molds, basically. Mm-hmm. And so...
And then smooth it out, and either groove it or do what they have to. Put in areas for stress fracturing to happen, things like that.
Exactly, because they have to allow these slabs of concrete to expand and contract with the change in temperature. Mm-hmm. So that's most of what we're driving on now, unless, of course, you're driving on an unpaved road.
Yeah. You could be driving on one of the old McAdam roads.
The old McAdam roads?
Yeah, the old McAdam roads.
Why don't you school me on that one?
McAdam. Let me see if I can dig through my notes here. I wasn't planning to get to this quite yet, but McAdam, he's the guy who, he's a Scotsman, and he's the one who's kind of, I guess, the developer of this modern way of making roads, really. But they weren't paved, they weren't, and in a sense they were paved. I'll get to that in a minute.
But okay.
They're not concrete, they're not really asphalt, they're really just materials bound together by themselves that made this thing so strong. What happened was, this is around early 1800s, like 1820s maybe.
Okay.
He developed this way. He was the, I forget his title, but he was like, you know, and had a charge of the roads, the roadway system. And he figured out these ways to create a stronger material that wouldn't be eroded away or that wouldn't catch wagon wheels, that wouldn't, it was a smooth surface that could be I guess easily laid out into a surface that, you know, a lot of vehicles could travel on, and it wouldn't cause a lot of ruts. It wouldn't be
wouldn't have the problems like cobblestones.
Wasn't quite as dangerous. Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't have the problems of cobblestones, but it also wouldn't wash away like, you know, just a dirt road would. So basically, what McAdam's idea was is that he had this road building theory, and the theory was that the stones all had to be certain sizes at certain levels. And within millimeters of each other. And he had workmen that would carry around scales, and they would measure the stones, and these are the foremen. And he said, you know, at this level, they need to be this size and this thickness. And then they need to sit for this long, and you need to tamp them at this rate, and you need to use a hammer to break them this way. But his idea was that workmen could build these roads basically sitting down with a pile of rocks and using hammers to chip away at the rocks individually to make the roads. Now, they're not fitting them together necessarily like a stonemason would. Okay. They're just chipping them down to a certain size and then laying them on the road, you know, shovelful by shovelful, each one. But he was very, very careful about how he laid down his roads, you know, how everything had to be exactly right, otherwise it wouldn't really work. And it relied on everything settling and fitting together. You know, they just kind of naturally fit together. And that was the whole theory behind this roadway system. And he said that there's a proper method for breaking them apart. And the proper method was using certain weight hammers, and he'd have to sit down with these small. The person would have to sit down with these small hammers, chip away the rocks, and make sure that none of them were larger in weight than 6 ounces at a certain point. And he said that, you know, the supervisors could come around and check the weight of the stones if they had these scales, which most of them did. But they said that the workmen his idea was that the workmen could check the size of the stones themselves by placing the stones in their mouth. If they could fit it in their mouth, it was just the right size. If they couldn't fit it in their mouth, it was too large. They couldn't use that stone, so they had to chip it a little bit more. I know. I mean, can you imagine going to work and them telling you to put a stone in your mouth to check the size? I think the idea was that, you know, it was just, imagine if you could put the stone in your mouth. It's like about the size of an egg or something
it's
like
not
that.
Physically doing
yeah,
it.
Exactly. Exactly. If you couldn't put this in your mouth and it's too large, keep chipping away with that hammer.
Well, that's more of a handy reference though.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I think it was really. But it's a funny way to say it though, that if you know if you can't fit that stone in your mouth, don't put it down.
I don't think they say that at the construction sites today.
No, I don't think so. I've never had a job like that, I can say. But anyways, his idea was that if you spread them all out, you know, very carefully in the right levels, that the natural, I guess, movement of the road traffic would settle the road onto itself. And this took months. I mean, the workers would have to go back time after time and apply, you know, different layers of material in order to make this work. So as it got washed away, they would have to add another level of material,
sure.
let it settle again, let the road traffic take care of it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Well, there's one problem with this, and that's when automobiles started to come around. And this is after his death, because I'm not sure when he died exactly, but it was prior to automobiles.
Okay.
And, maybe not steam automobiles, but, you know, the internal combustion automobiles.
Right.
So, He's more dealing with horse and wagons and things like that, mm-hmm. right? Foot traffic, et cetera. So the problem with these macadam roads, as they're still known, even they still call them macadam roads because there's some around. I mean, the country roads, a lot of them are built using these principles. But there's an area of low pressure that's created when a fast moving car, passes over a road. And that low pressure area allows the dirt and all the stuff that's accumulated between the stones to be lifted out. Whereas, you know, a low speed wagon, mm-hmm. that wouldn't happen. You know, they were far too high up. It just wasn't, you know, the force involved with an automobile. So a lot of these roads were falling apart, really. You know, the material between them was coming out.
So an auto going like 45 miles per hour, for instance, mm-hmm. would actually be sucking apart pieces of this road.
Exactly. The road would be crumbling. Only because it would not the weight and not necessarily the motion, but it was the negative air pressure underneath that was lifting the material out, and it would leave these huge clouds of smoke behind the car, even though they're on a semi-paved road. I think you could call this a paved road.
A settled road?
I don't know.
Call it a paved road because it does have. I think you could because it's not like there is a specific substance that's rolled out mm-hmm. under it to make it a smooth substance,
yeah.
But there's definitely engineering that goes into it.
Sure, there's a method there.
Yeah, there's a method.
Yeah, a very strict method, as a matter of fact. I mean, when you listen to what this guy had in mind.
I am so glad I'm not eating rocks.
Yeah, that's right. Sounds like quite a tough foreman there.
Right.
But the way they fixed this was they eventually decided to coat the surface with tar. And so when they coated the surface with tar, it sealed in the materials and allowed the vehicles to use that the roadway the same way that they normally had been. I'm assuming it was pretty messy.
Yeah.
Had to have been a bit sticky mess. But really what that ended up becoming known as was blacktop or tarmac.
Mm-hmm.
Tarmac is just a short way to say tar, macadam road, tarmac.
Ah.
So it makes sense, huh?
There you go.
Yeah, so there you go.
Tarmac.
So that's John McAdam and his contribution to their roadway systems.
I've got a little bit about modern roads.
Great.
You want to hear?
Yeah, I do.
Okay,
I've got
so
a little bit too. But
yeah?
Yeah.
I'm just going to walk through from a website about building roads from your home away from home, Michigan.
Oh, okay.
So we're not going to talk too much about the first part, which is this by the Michigan Department of Transportation. They talk about, you know, how to locate where a road should be paved or where a road should be laid.
Oh, sure, the initial surveying of the land.
Right, and then how to design it to best mm-hmm. fit that terrain. So mm-hmm. what's the soil like? What's the drainage like? As we alluded to earlier with potholes, it's very important. How much traffic? How many cars versus trucks versus buses? How much future development could happen in the area, and then how will this affect the people the people in the ecosystem already there?
Wow.
So let's say they decide we're going to build this anyway. They start with earthwork because that is, according to them, one of the most important part in establishing a foundation. because if it doesn't have, if a road doesn't have a good foundation, it's going to fail. So they build embankments using cuts and fills. They level screen dirt, and they do that because leveling bumps and filling in dips makes the surface that'll actually support the road instead of getting those mysterious kind of asphalt dunes.
Yeah, you know, we see a lot of cuts and fills here in this part of the world.
Especially
when you head a little bit north of here, when you get into the mountains, you see cuts into the mountains that are dramatic.
Right, where you can see those little dynamite rods on the side.
Yeah, the rods like where they bored down for that. Yeah. That's amazing.
And then after they do that, they spray the dirt with water and compact it as much as possible. And then, this is interesting, they install drains and sewers first. And the center of the road is always going to be higher than the edge of the road, so the water will run off.
Okay, the road crown, I think, is what they call that, right?
Right, because when we're talking about asphalt and concrete, we're talking about, again, non-porous, as you said. And then they have a stage of inspections. Then they put gravel in 12-inch layers on the road. They moisten, compact each layer. The layers are added and compacted until the road bed reaches the height they originally saw in the design. This is when they start paving it. And when they pave it, they have to, you know, of course, being a government outfit, they have to figure out the cost in advance and, you know, justify the price there. And then after they do the paving, they have to have testers. They have to have quality testers to ride it.
Testers?
Yeah, that's like
testers that ride
like
the road?
It's a job, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, what are we doing here, man?
I don't know.
Well, these
you paid to drive on the road just to see how it feels?
Well, you have to do some other stuff. You have to use seismology equipment to measure vibrations of the pavement, too.
I'm out.
Yeah.
I don't know how to use seismology equipment.
I know, and you have this crazy hate of it, too.
Yeah, no.
but you know, so after that quality testing, then the final steps are another drainage test, grading, landscaping, grinding pavement to make sure it's smooth, and applying the permanent markings, the yellow lines, the white lines, that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool.
There's a lot of work that goes in there, man.
Cool. You know what? I got a couple of facts here from the same site that you went to, probably.
Blow my mind.
MDOT, from Michigan.gov, actually.
Yes, sir.
About the state of Michigan. They've got a lot of transportation first, as you would imagine. They're the Motor City, so they've been with this right from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I got a couple of them here. I don't know. Maybe you just mentioned the yellow line, which this is one of the facts. But the one I really wanted to get to, I'll leave for the end.
Okay.
I've only got a couple.
All right.
I'll keep it at that. So these are national firsts in Michigan.
Okay.
The nation's first painted center line was in Michigan in 1911. They painted a road, river road near Trenton by the Wayne County Road Commission. So the first painted center line was in Michigan. Now, you don't think about stuff like this, but someone had to be first, and they had that. And there's also the same there's an intersection where they had the first red yellow green light, the first yellow red yellow green electric traffic light.
Before, were they just the little signs that came out?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, where they had the guy up in the crow's nest type thing directing traffic. The nation's first four-way was at the corner of Woodward and Michigan Avenue in Detroit. And it was an invention of a Detroit police officer, William Potts, and that was in 1918.
Wow.
So that's early, early on in the automobile.
He was probably tired of accidents.
You know what? I'm not going to read all these. I just want to do another one. Just one, the one that I really wanted to get to here.
Yeah.
The nation's first mile of concrete highway that was built by the Wayne County Road Commission, Woodward Avenue between 6 and 7 mile roads in Detroit in 1909, the nation's first mile of concrete highway was built in Wayne County.
101 years ago for
us. 100, and that's on Woodward Avenue. That's where they have that huge Woodward Avenue Dream Cruise every year.
And that's also the four-way stop.
Well,
maybe down the street.
Another road.
Oh, okay.
Another road. But,
oh.
Anyways, that's, I thought that was interesting. The first mile of concrete highway was there.
So I guess
I got one more quick thing if you want.
Yes, I do.
I found out... Just one more quick thing. I think you were trying to wrap up there, right?
I was working on my out segue because I thought you were giving me
I've only got one more little tidbit of information here that I find interesting because I've always wondered about the term turnpike.
Turnpike,
yes. You ever wonder about turnpike?
I have also wondered.
I found this out, and I was looking around, and I think this may have come from Curbstone, but I'm not sure. Check into this. But the word turnpike, really, it comes from early, early American history. Way back. And the reason is that, you know, the roads we're talking about, a lot of times the federal and state governments would say, you know what, let's give this to a private company to build this road. The private company would build the road, and then they'd say, we're going to erect a toll plaza, and you're going to pay a toll to use our road, and that's how we're going to pay for this construction project. And when it's done, we'll tear down the toll plaza, and the road is yours.
Okay. Okay.
So that's how they gained their money back. They were able to build these toll roads. And it turns out toll roads were really common in early America. Because a lot of the projects were funded this way, you know, because the states just didn't have the money to do it. The federal government had other interests at the time, you know, whatever it might be. So a lot of them were these individually owned toll roads. And so the term turnpike comes from this, and in that a pike means a large log, apparently. So a pike is a large log, and the large log that crosses the toll road at the toll house, because they had these toll houses built.
Yeah.
It would either be mounted on one end where they would have to lift it to get it out of the way for you to travel through after you paid your toll, or, this is where it comes from, if it was mounted in the center of the pike. So if it was mounted in the center of the pike, now imagine a large large log mounted in the center. If you'd pay your toll, they would turn the pike to allow you to travel in and out. It's like a big turnstile almost for a car.
Weird.
So, you know, someone would manually push one end of it and open it up, allow you to drive through, and then they would, you know, kind of crank it back shut. So they would turn the pike and allow you to go.
There you go, man. That's crazy. Huh? Why do we still call them turnpikes?
Well,
then?
I don't know. It's just one of those things that's maintained, you know, I guess.
Maybe there's one somewhere. I'd like to think.
I would like to think that there is, but
there's one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I guess the best way for us to end is to say that the future of roads and pavement may be upon us already, Scott, because, you know, this is still a continual evolution. I think we've shown that things are by no means perfect at this point. And there's a really interesting, fascinating article that we have on our site about green pavement, which we're just going to let you guys go to the handy-dandy search bar and figure that one out.
Green pavement.
Green pavement, yep. Yes, sir. And while you're there, listeners out there in internet land, feel free to swing on by and check out all of the other articles we have up there, as well as your blog, Scott.
Yeah, we've got the High Speed Stuff blog that you can check out. And I try to post there occasionally, not every day, but I try to as much as I can keep up with it. And I blog about what we talk about on the podcast, and there's links to that, and links to the articles that we talk about, and it's, you know, a good place to get a little bit of additional information.
And we try really hard to cover things that we think you would find interesting and, again, fascinating. But if for some crazy reason we miss something that you really want to hear about, guys...
That's likely.
Yeah, just send us an email.
At highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new High Speed Stuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.